Welcome to Turkey Crossing, everyone. This is Paul Bogish, and thank you for stopping by to hang out with me while we talk about how to get our kids to solve problems, collaborate, create, innovate, dialogue, and get their imaginations cranking, all while using Classroom 2.0 tools and not forgetting that the most important thing in the world is not an online connection, but a teacher-student connection. So relax, close your eyes, unless you're driving, eating, or skydiving, and open your mind for another edition of Turkey Crossing. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Turkey Crossing. This is Paul Bogish, and welcome back. And if it's your first time ever here on Turkey Crossing, thanks for stopping by. Today's podcast is going to be very different for two reasons. Reason number one, I might have to check the archives to verify this. I think this might be the first podcast I'm doing inside. I'm pretty sure that every single other one that I've done, I've been outside somewhere. And I'm actually in the house. My in-laws rented the house up in the Berkshires for the week, and I'm actually in the house. And it's kind of a weird feeling. I want to be doing it outside, but because of the second reason, you'll see why. The second reason is I'm actually going to be... I've done a slide presentation that I want to put up on TeacherTube or some equivalent, and I actually want to try doing an audio version of it, just in case someone's interested in hearing it and doing something else, not being stuck in front of a computer while watching it. And it is based on one of the three great books I read this summer, the trilogy, and here they are. First book I read. And I will admit, I didn't want to admit to reading it so late and after everybody else, and I know this has been all over the internet and everything else, but I'm one of those people that once everybody else is doing it, I tend to avoid it until it's no longer trendy. But I did give in, and I read The World is Flat, and, you know, I'm not going to say anything about it. Obviously, an incredible must-read book. The second book that I read was A Whole New Mind by Daniel Pink. I think it's a perfect book to read right after The World is Flat. And again, enough has been said about it out there on the internet. Again, A Whole New Mind by Daniel Pink. If you haven't read it or heard of it, please check it out. The third book that I read is a book that I don't know if I've really heard mentioned in many places. It's called Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath, H-E-A-T-H. And I think it's the perfect third book to read after those first two. The first two books really opens your mind into all this stuff that's going to be happening in the future. And, you know, inevitably, after reading those books, you want to change how you do things. And at least for me, what those two books did is it kind of drove me to now want to help change other people's minds, maybe, you know, my friends, my family, staff. And Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath, I think, gives a pretty neat formula for how to get the ideas in the first two books across to people. What I found, and it was very interesting, is the more and more and more that I've researched about using all this, you know, wiki spaces and or wikis and podcasts and blogs and all this other Classroom 2.0 dubbed stuff, I find people listening to me less and less, especially friends. I really haven't talked to many other educators about it, but as I go and speak to friends, or if I go to a picnic or something, I found that I'm able to keep people's interest for a less amount of time than when I first started with it. And you know, I quickly began to realize that I've acquired all this knowledge on these things and how to use them and why they're important, and I've read all of these books and I've filled my brain with knowledge, and what's happened is I forgot to remember that everybody else that I'm talking to doesn't have any of this content. And I think in the beginning of this process, when I started to research this stuff, I could definitely was able to see, you know, interested looks from people I was talking to, and they stayed with me for the whole conversation. And the more I knew, the less I was able to communicate why this stuff was so important. And that's what I've really been thinking about a lot for the last month, is now that I can cite all sorts of statistics, I can cite all sorts of examples, I have all sorts of stuff my kids are going to be doing, how do I communicate all of this and why it's important to someone who has absolutely zero knowledge of it? And I have a parent meeting coming up in approximately, I don't know, 9-10 days or so, and I've been struggling with this. I've been, you know, working out on a wiki, morecowbell.wikispaces.com. I've been working out a plan for a presentation. I've been planning my opening line, my closing line, and all the lines in between. And I was really stuck. I was stuck on how to communicate all this stuff that I've learned to someone who doesn't know any of it. Because I know for sure that when I first started this, and I started messing around with the wiki 3 years ago, I had a lot of questions. I wasn't convinced. Of course, there was all the security questions in the back of my mind. There was just simply, is this actually beneficial to my kid in any way? And I've come so far that I've forgotten how to, I don't know, talk to someone who is just starting out and how to lead them along properly. That was until I think I read the book Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath. Totally not written to educators, totally not written for someone who's trying to do a 2.0 presentation to parents, but the entire time I read it, I just constantly kept, probably as a lot of us do, convert everything we read to how does it apply in a classroom or how does it apply in an educational setting. And so what I did is I took a whole bunch of notes from the book, and I thought that other people might be interested in some of these ideas, and so I started to put them onto some slides in a PowerPoint, and I figured I'd stick it on my wiki or something like that. And I kept going and going and going, and now I'm at the point where I can see maybe where I want to go with it, but I know I'm not going to have time. School starts in a day or two. And actually, by the time this is posted, I'll already be within my first week of school, because I don't have the internet capability to post this while I'm up here. And so I'm thinking what I'm going to do is I'm going to post the presentation as is. If I had more time, I would definitely change some things in it and make it a little bit more fluid. So especially as I watch the slides, again, I'm in one of those situations where, to me, they make total sense, but to someone else, if I read them out loud, like I'm interested on this podcast, how it's going to come out just reading them flat out when you can't see a title change or you can't see a bold word for emphasis. So I'll be interested to see how it goes, but I'm gonna give it a shot, and I'll post it anyway. All right. So once again, the book was called Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath, and this is the presentation that I made on it. And hopefully, some point next week, by the time that this podcast is posted, it'll be up on TeacherTube. I'll put it there, and the title. All right, I'm going to come with the title right now. How about if I just do, how do you get a lesson to stick? That's my first slide. All right, so how do you get a lesson to stick? Here's my thoughts. How do you get a lesson to stick? Why do some lessons survive in some kids' heads for a lifetime and others don't make it to the door? This podcast is based on my notes from the book Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath. I've changed a lot of the ideas and quotes to fit situations a teacher would encounter. And this slideshow can in no way act as a substitute for the book. Buy it, because it'll make your lessons stick. So what's one of the biggest problems teachers have to overcome when planning their lessons? It is the curse of knowledge, 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 knowledge. Sorry, I don't want to go back and do the sound effects, so here we go again. The curse of knowledge, 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 knowledge. Once we know something, we find it hard to imagine what it was like not to know it. our knowledge curses us, and it becomes difficult for us to share knowledge with students because we can't readily recreate their state of mind. Teachers can present creative lessons in a way that break the curse of knowledge. Highly creative lessons are more predictable than uncreative ones. No matter the subject, the teacher, the length, the setting, creative lessons always share the same common attributes. So if creative lessons consistently make use of the same basic set of templates, then perhaps creativity can be taught. There are six basic principles that make good lessons stick. Simplicity. Number two, unexpectedness. Number three, concreteness. Number four, credibility. Number five, they're emotional. And number six, they're a story. And if you take that first letter of each one of those words, you get success. S-U-C-C-E-S. First one is simple. What's simple? Finding the core of the lesson. Finding the core means stripping a lesson down to its most critical essence. To get to the core, we need to weed out the superfluous and tangential elements. I guess I can write them, but can't say them, huh? That's easy. The hard part is weeding ideas out of our lessons that may really be important, but just aren't the most important. Giving students more ideas and concepts in a lesson can make them less likely to remember any of them. Quantity can actually cause lesson paralysis. Lessons that focus on lots of facts are hard to remember. It's easy to remember concepts over data. Compact lessons are stickier, but compact lessons alone aren't valuable. Only lessons with profound compactness are valuable. So to make a lesson compact, you've got to pack a lot of meaning into a little bit of messaging. How do you do that? You use flags. You tap the existing memory terrain of your students. You use what's already there. It is possible to create complexity through the artful use of simplicity. If your lesson has simple ideas staged and layered correctly, they can very quickly become complex. And it's easier for kids to learn a new concept by tying it to one that they already know. Connect new concepts to schemas they already have. You don't know what a schema is. The definition that was used in the book was, a schema is a collection of generic properties of a concept or category. Schemas are lots of pre-recorded information stored in our memories. So connect new concepts to schemas they already have. Schemas help kids create complex messages from simple materials. Utilize the schemas the students bring with them. Teachers are tempted to tell students everything with perfect accuracy right up front, when they should be giving students just enough info to be useful, then a little more, then a little more. A great way to avoid useless accuracy and to dodge the curse of knowledge is to use analogies. Analogies derive their power from schemas. Second one is an unexpected. The most basic way to get students' attention is this: break a pattern. Students adapt incredibly quick to consistent patterns. Constant sensory stimulation makes students tune out. Stop and listen right now. Listen to sounds all around you that you've never heard before or you haven't paid attention to in a while. You ready? I'm going to just stop and pause for a minute. You ready? I'm going to stop talking and I want you to listen in the room to noises that you just totally zoned out. It's pretty cool, huh? You know, all of a sudden now I can hear waves hitting the edge of the shore that I never realized. I can hear the voices of people next door, and I can hear my computer humming. All sounds which I totally zoned out. But anyway, you know, let's go on. So how do you get your students' attention, and how do you keep it? How do you keep them from just zoning out? Surprise and interest. Surprise gets our attention and interest keeps our attention. You can plan unexpectedness. Unexpected components of lessons violate students' schemas. Unexpected lessons have surprises that are not predictable, but to be satisfying, they must be post-dictable. The twist makes sense, but it is not something you could have seen coming. No gimmicks. Your unexpected ideas will produce insight when they target an aspect of the students' minds that relate to your lesson's core message. Think of lessons as mysteries. Mysteries are powerful. They create a need for closure. That aha experience is more satisfying when it's preceded by the huh experience. Teachers can use mysteries not just to heighten students' interest and curiosity in the day's material, but to train them to think as scientists and historians. And that curiosity is when students feel a gap, and they feel a gap in their knowledge. It is the intellectual need to answer questions and close gaps. story plays to this need by doing the opposite. It poses questions and opens situations. And that gap kind of causes the students pain. They want to know something, but don't. It's like having an itch that you need to scratch. You know, that one in the middle of your back you can't get to. To make it go away, they need to fill the gap. Teachers need to open the gaps before they close them. Don't just tell students facts. First, they have to realize they need them. Kids need to be convinced that they need the lesson's message. Highlight the information they're missing. Lessons that lead to consensus don't open gaps. Students are less interested and become less interested in the topic. The more information students gain, the more likely they are to focus on what they don't know. Students need some content before they can care. Knowledge gaps create interest. But to prove the gap exists, it might be helpful to highlight some knowledge first. So here's what you know, now here's what you're missing. When students are close to a solution of a puzzle, curiosity takes over and propels them to finish. All right, next one is concrete. Abstraction is the luxury of the expert. Abstraction makes it harder for students to understand an idea and remember it. It also makes it harder to have students collaborate on an activity because they may each interpret the abstraction in very different ways. Concreteness helps us avoid these problems. What makes something concrete? If you can examine something with your senses, it's concrete. An apple is concrete. No child left behind? Abstract. Concrete language helps students, especially when they explore concepts and topics that are totally foreign. If you have to teach something to students and you aren't certain what they know, concreteness is the only safe language. Concrete ideas are easy to remember. Concrete nouns are easy to memorize than abstract nouns. Think about book versus justice. The more hooks your concrete ideas have, the easier it is to remember. A lesson might hook into a student's emotional need, musical interest, school life, personal background. If you create more hooks, you create more stickiness. Concreteness is a way to mobilize and focus the kids' brains. And think about this one for a second. And I know at first it might sound like these two are equal, but you ready? I'm going to read a question to you, and I'm going to give you, I don't know, 5 seconds. Count how many things, how many answers you can come up with for each question. Ready? First one. Name 5 things that are cold. Next question. Remember how many you got? How many you had? Next question. Name 5 things in your freezer. Probably on the second question, I know at least I added more for the second question when I read the book. And most people, when I did it with my family, everybody had more for the second question. Concreteness creates a sense of shared turf on which students and teachers can collaborate, so each student feels comfortable that they're tackling the same challenge. Being concrete isn't hard and doesn't require a lot of effort. The barrier is forgetfulness. We forget that we are slipping into this abstract speak. Don't forget the students don't know what you know. Next one is credible. Why should students believe your message? The use of vivid details is one way to create internal credibility, to weave sources of credibility into the idea itself. Another way is with statistics. Statistics are a good source of internal credibility when they're used to illustrate relationships. When it comes to statistics, use them as input, not output. Use them to allow students to make up their mind on an issue. Don't have students make up their minds and then go looking for numbers to support their choice. That's asking for temptation and trouble. The most obvious source of credibility, external validation and statistics, aren't always the best. A few vivid details might be more persuasive than a barrage of statistics. Next one is emotional. Belief counts for a lot, but belief is not enough. For people to take action, they have to care. Mother Teresa once said, "If I look at the mass, I will never act. If I look at the one, I will." The goal of making lessons emotional is to make students care. Feelings inspire people to act. How do we make students care about our lesson's message? To make them care, you don't have to produce emotion from an absence of emotion. Piggyback on emotions the students already experience. Emphasize benefits, not features. Tell the kids what they will get from the lesson instead of all the features of the lesson. Each teacher should answer WIFY before the start of each lesson. That's W-I-I-F-Y. And each letter stands for What's in it for you? It's the tangibility rather than the magnitude of the benefits that makes students care. You don't have to promise riches and beauty and magnetic personalities. Promise reasonable benefits that students can easily imagine themselves doing. Self-interest is important, and we can make people care by appealing to it. It makes for a limited palette. Always structuring our ideas around self-interest is like always painting with one color. It's stifling for us and uninspiring for others. Asking why helps to remind us of core values, the core principles that underline our ideas. Toyota uses a five whys process for getting to the bottom of problems and avoiding the curse of knowledge. Asking repeatedly why we are doing a lesson moves our focus from a set of associations that have no power to a deeper, more concrete associations that connect emotionally with students. How do we get students to care about the ideas in our lessons? We get them to take off their analytical hats. We create empathy for specific individuals. We show how our ideas are associated with things that people already care about. We appeal to their self-interest, but also appeal to their identities. Not only to the people they are now, but also to the people they would like to be. Stories. When we hear a story, our minds move from room to room. When we hear a story, we simulate it. But what is a good simulation? Stories are told and retold because they contain wisdom. Stories are effective teaching tools. They show how context can mislead people to make the wrong decisions. Stories illustrate casual relationships that the students hadn't recognized before and highlight the unexpected, resourceful ways in which people have solved problems. Why does mental stimulation work? It works because students can't imagine events or sequences without evoking the same modules of the brain that are evoked in real physical activity. The right kind of story is, effectively, a simulation. Create lessons that fit into one of the three basic story plots: challenge, connection, creativity. The key element to a challenge plot is that obstacles seem daunting to the protagonist. Challenge plots are inspiring in a defined way. They inspire students to work harder, take on new challenges, and overcome obstacles. Connection plots inspire students in social ways. They make them want to help others, be more tolerant of others, work with others, love others. Connection plots are all about relationships with other people. The creativity plot involves someone making a mental breakthrough, solving a long-standing puzzle, or attacking a problem in an innovative way. A guy faces obstacle, guy overcomes obstacle. Stories can almost single-handedly defeat the curse of knowledge. Stories are almost always concrete. Most have emotional and unexpected elements. The hardest part of story is making sure that they are simple, that they reflect the core message of the lesson. It's not enough to tell your kids a great story. The story has to also reflect your agenda. Stories have the amazing dual power to stimulate and to inspire. And most of the time, we don't even have to use much creativity to harness these powers. We just need to be ready to spot the good ones that life Stories have the amazing dual power to simulate and to inspire. And most of the time, we don't even have to use much creativity to harness these powers. We just need to be ready to spot the good ones that life generates every day. So again, the six components to a sticky lesson. Unexpected, paying attention. Concrete, helps them understand and remember. Credible, has them believe it and agree with you. Emotional, they care. Stories, they act. And simple, that can help at any stage. So this is a direct quote from the book. That's the great thing about the world of ideas. Any of us with the right insight and message can make an idea stick. Again, this podcast and the notes I just read from are inspired by the book Made to Stick. I've changed a lot of the notes and sentences that I took from the book. I'm definitely sure there's got to be some in there that I've ripped off word for word from Chip Heath and Dan Heath. And I in no way, shape, or form claim them to be original. But again, I kind of took my notes and as I wrote them down was writing them to apply to me. And so again, the book is Made to Stick, subtitled Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die. It's by Chip Heath and Dan Heath. It's published by Random House Books in 2007. And again, I'm going to try to put this up onto TeacherTube when I get back home and have a decent internet connection. And I will call it How Do You Get a Lesson to Stick? So, thank you very much if you made it to the end. Again, I've never really done a podcast like that, reading off of notes or even, again, being inside. I do notice that when I read it flat out, there seems to be some places that kind of jump. But because of time, I'm going to publish as is, and if anybody has interest in it, they can take and do with it whatever they want. But again, this is Paul Bogish. The podcast is Turkey Crossing. And again, if you've made it this far, please leave me a comment. You can either email it to me, pbogish@wallingford.k12.ct.us, or you can go to the Podomatic site and look up Turkey Crossing and leave a comment there. Or if you're listening to this on iTunes, you can listen there too. But I'm always interested to see who's listening and what kind of thoughts you have, and always, always, always open for some constructive criticism. Definitely interested in how I can make these podcasts better. So again, thank you very much for hanging out for me. The timer says 24 minutes, so this was quite a lengthy one. And again, thank you very much. I appreciate you listening. And come back again and visit in a couple days, and I'll try to get another one up here. Thanks. Bye-bye.